Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's March 10th. This is the pre-Purim halacha share. Okay, let's start with Parshas Zohar, since that's what we're coming up before Purim. So that's next Shabbos. So Parshas Zohar is the one reading of the Torah that is a Torah law. And therefore, even women are required to hear Parshas Zohar. So because of that, many women try to make it to Shul, and it's a meritorious thing to do, that's for sure, to come to Shul, it's a good thing, to hear Parshas Zohar. Many times a woman cannot come to Shul for the regular reading of Parshas Zohar. There are small children, and it's not possible to make it to Shul. Certainly it's impossible to come with the small children because they'll be disruptive. So what is a woman to do? So it's important that women know that the halacha is that if one can't come to Shul, then what she should do is read it out of a chumash in her house. There is no requirement to come hear a second reading of Parshas Zohar in Shul. It's true that it is read in Shul. They do an extra reading, and it's a nice thing to go if you can. But as far as the halacha is concerned, the basic halacha is, if you can't make it to Shul, you read it from a chumash in the comfort of your own home, and that is fine. There is no requirement to come and actually hear it in the minyan if you cannot make it for the regular reading of Parshas Zohar. After Parshas Zohar, the next step for Purim is, of course, Tainus Esther. So, Tainus Esther is a public fast, and as a public fast, anybody who is able to should fast. It is, of all of the fast days that we have on the calendar, it is the most diminished, which means that it takes the least amount of excuse to eat on Tainus Esther. So, obviously, if a person is not feeling well, then they should eat on Tainus Esther, they should not fast. A woman who is either pregnant or nursing should not fast on Tainus Esther. Many poskim will say that a woman who has small children and needs to be dealing with her small children would be exempt from fasting on Tainus Esther. You should ask your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi, for how to deal with Tainus Esther, whether you should or should not fast. But as I said, there are more dispensations for Tainus Esther than there are for other fasts. But this makes a big difference for the reading that night of the Megillah, because the halacha is that night, which is the night of Purim, which is the reading of the Megillah, the halacha is you're not allowed to eat before the reading of the Megillah. One has to wait until after the reading of the Megillah to eat, which means that it ends up being a very long fast, because we don't break our fast until after the Megillah is over, which is a good amount of time after the fast is officially over. So it's one thing for people who are coming to hear the Megillah at the first reading. So okay, so you have to tack on another whatever it is, hour or so to their fast until they can finally get home and eat. Okay, fine. But what about, again, women who are at home with small children and they can't come to the first reading of the Megillah, so they can't hear Megillah till later. So what are they supposed to do about breaking their fast? If they are in fact fasting, so what is a woman supposed to do about about eating? Should they wait until 10, 11 o'clock at night to finally break their fast because they have to wait till after Megillah? So that would be very difficult to do. So first of all, anybody, not just women who are coming to a later fast, a later Megillah reading, but even those who are coming to the first Megillah reading, if a person is feeling ill, then they can break their fast before the reading of the Megillah, preferably not a whole meal, preferably just some water or a small snack, something which doesn't count as a whole meal would be the best thing to do if one is feeling like they really need, they're really in a lot of tsar, it's very difficult for them to wait till after the Megillah, so then one can have something small before the Megillah. But if a woman is at home and can't come to the first reading, usually that's because there are small children at home. As I said before, when there are small children, many poskim will say that a woman shouldn't fast to begin with. So I'm not saying that's the case for everybody. And as I said, you should ask your Rav what you should do if you have small children at home. But That means that if in fact your Rav tells you you should fast, but when the fast is over and you're waiting for the second reading, so in that case you can certainly eat and you can eat a full meal before the second reading, because it's questionable whether you needed to fast in the first place. So even if your Rav tells you you should fast, because your circumstances dictate you should, and of course you should follow whatever your Rav says, but the eating before the reading of the Megillah, when you're going to be waiting until much later to hear the Megillah, certainly there's no question that you can eat, and you can eat a full meal, whatever you need to eat. The only caveat is that you should make sure there's someone to remind you to hear the Megillah. That can be a husband, that can be a friend, that somebody who is going to the first reading remind you that you need to hear Megillah, that you shouldn't forget, shouldn't go through the night and go to sleep and forget all about hearing the Megillah. So there should be someone to remind you that you need to hear the Megillah. The person who reminds you should be someone who is themselves not waiting for the second reading. Meaning, if it's someone who also needs to wait for the second reading, well, then they also need to be reminded. See, that doesn't count as a reminder. It has to be someone who doesn't need to be reminded. So someone who's going to the first reading should be appointed to remind you to make sure that you hear the second reading. But as long as you're taking care of that, there is no problem, and you can eat completely before the second reading of the Megillah. Yeah?
What about if you don't have little children, but for whatever reason you have to go to the second Megillah?
Yes. There's less room to permit it, but still, it's so late. Unless you're really, really good faster, most of us are very weak, and it's very hard to fast all that time. So again, one can eat and appoint someone to remind them that they need to hear the Megillah. One more thing about Tanis Esther, it doesn't have to be done on Tanis Esther, but there is a minhag to give the Machatzis HaShekel on Tanis Esther. Machatzis HaShekel today is only a minhag. There is no halacha of Machatzis HaShekel today. The Machatzis HaShekel, giving the half shekel, of course, was in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and it was a requirement, as we read in Parashas Shkalim, and the requirement was to give a half shekel. Today we don't have a requirement, it's a minhag. The minhag is to give a half of whatever the currency is where you live. So we have dollars here, so it would be a half dollar, and to give three of those half currencies. So it would be three half dollars here in the United States. That's the minhag. I said it's only a minhag. And the reason why three is because it mentions to give a truma three times, both in Parshas Truma and in Parshas Kisisa. So because of that, the minhag is to give three half, again, dollars here, whatever the currency is in the country that you live. The way that it's typically done is that shuls have, most people don't have half dollars available to them, so shuls have a bin up on the bima, and there's a few different sets of three half dollars, and you take $1.50 or however much tzedakah you want, and you put it in, and through that you acquire the three half dollars, lift it up, so now you own those three half dollars, put it back down, and then you've given your three half dollars. That's the way it's typically done, and the minhag is to do it on Tainus Esther before Purim. That's the minhag to do it. They usually, on the night of Purim, they have it up there on the bima before Megillah reading. That's the minhag. The question is, who has to do it, and do women have to do it at all? So we know the Machatzis HaShekel was only given by men, not by women, and it was only given for men who are 20 and up, not under 20 years old. And therefore, the minhag, according to many poskim, does not include any man under 20, and it doesn't include women at all. Some say that it's meritorious for those men under 20 to do it, but women are not required to do it. Some say women can do it as well. There's certainly no requirement for a woman to do it, to do Machatzis HaShekel. There's nothing wrong with doing it, and some say it is included in the minhag, but it's only a minhag to begin with, and according to many poskim, women are not included in the minhag, but there's nothing wrong with doing it. If that is the way you've always done it, you can certainly do it. It's basically tzedakah. That's what it is. It's tzedakah, and it's a mitzvah of tzedakah, but if you, for whatever reason, you can't do it, or you can't get to it, or you never heard of it, or how am I supposed to do that, or it's another pressure, then don't let it get to you. It's okay. You don't have to run to do the Machatzis HaShekel. Any questions on these pre-Purim things before we get to the actual mitzvahs of Purim itself? Yeah.
Can you just give any amount?
Yeah, so the shuls aren't, they're not particular about it. It's, what you're doing is you're actually buying those three half dollars. But the shuls don't require you to put in $1.50. So you can put in whatever you want and pick it up, and you acquire it and put it back down. Right. Any other questions? Okay, so the reading of the Megillah. Reading of the Megillah is one of the four mitzvos that we have on Purim. The four mitzvos of Purim are hearing the Megillah, Shalach Manos, Matanos La'Evyonim, and the Seuda. Those are four mitzvos. Purim, of course, isn't completely a Dirabbanan. It's a rabbinic holiday, so all the mitzvos are rabbinic. There is no Torah law on Purim. It's all rabbinic. So one of them is hearing the Megillah. One is required. Men and women are required to hear the entire Megillah, beginning to end, both at night and during the day. So you have to hear it twice, once at night, once during the day. Both men and women are required to hear the entire thing. It is best to hear it with a minyan, if possible. Many times it's not possible, not just for women, it's often not possible for men. So if one cannot hear it with a minyan, then it is acceptable to hear it without a minyan. It's just better to do it with a minyan. The way one hears the entire Megillah, of course, someone is reading from, one has to read it from a kosher cloth, from a kosher Megillah, and you have to hear every word. It's commonplace that people miss some words, particularly the banging of Haman. It's common that people miss some words. If you miss any words as you are listening to the Megillah, then you can read them yourself in your text, which is not a cloth. That's okay. And you can read and catch up to where the Chazan is up to where the Balkriya is up to, and that's fine. The main thing is that more than 50% you hear from the Balkriya, meaning that you don't want to be reading it yourself from a non-cloth more than 50% of the reading, which would be a lot. I mean, you don't have to worry about that. That doesn't happen. So you have to catch up. So I missed a word, so I kind of catch up. I got to read a line or two until I catch up to where the chazan is. Okay, then I can start to listen again. And that's okay to do. You should not read along with the chazan unless you're reading out of a cloth, because the whole point is to hear it from the reading of a cloth. If you have your own cloth, you could read along with the chazan. Of course, quietly, so you don't disturb the people around you, but that would be acceptable to do. Of course, you have to know the vowels. The cloth is without vowels. If you don't know the vowels, then it's better not to read along, because you got to get it right in order to fulfill the mitzvah. There is a famous story in Neri Yisrael in Baltimore. It actually was a little bit, slightly before my time. I came to Neri Yisrael in 1984. It was a little bit before that this happened, where the night of Purim, they read the Megillah in Neri Yisrael. Rav Shechtel Neuberger is the one who reads the Megillah. He has a very powerful, booming voice, and it's always fun to listen to him. And that night, there was a mesiba, and there was dancing, and there was drinking, and all kinds of stuff going on. And they listened to the recording of Rabbi Neuberger in his in the reading of the Megillah, and they discovered that he left out a word. He left out the word Hayom, Yavo Hamelech v'Haman Hayom Elam Yishteh. That when Esther invites Haman, Achashverosh and Haman to the party, she says Hayom. The problem is that there's a word Haman over there, so everybody was banging. And then when he started reading again, he left out the word Hayom. So they realized that, and it was terrible. They had to bring everybody back. Some people were drunk. They schlepped them back to the base marriage. They read all over again, the whole Megillah all over again. Which is why, if you ever hear Megillah in Neri Yisrael, and because I am a Neri Yisrael Talmud, I keep up this quote-unquote minhag, that whenever they get to that word in the Megillah, they do it very loud. Hayom. Just make sure they don't leave it out this time. But you have to hear the whole thing. There are parts of the Megillah that we repeat, or that we say before the Chazan says it. There are four psukim that we say before, and perhaps the most famous one is, they're all famous, I guess. You have Mordechai, you have Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Habira, and we have La'Yehudim Ha'Sa'ora B'Simcha V'Sasa Mikar, etc. We have the psukim that we all read before the Chazan reads it. The reason why is essentially to keep people interested and awake and know what's going on, and also those are the psukim of the festive psukim, so we read them. But afterwards, the chazan reads them again, so that we hear it read from a cloth, because we're reading it out of a non-cloth, and we want to hear it read from a cloth. So he reads it again, even though we've just said it to ourselves, but then he reads it, and one should listen when he reads it. In many shuls, including Beth Jacob, the minhag is that we say the 10 sons of Haman. Not all shuls do that, but we say the 10 sons of Haman before the chazan says the 10 sons of Haman. The minhag is to say those 10 sons of Haman in one breath. If you can't hold your breath that long and the words are not easy to read, don't worry about it. It doesn't invalidate the mitzvah. You don't have to say it at all. You're okay. Just listen to the chazan and it's not a problem. But if you can do it, so that's the minhag. The minhag is to do it. There are two psukim in the Megillah where we don't know what the proper word is. There are two psukim. One is later. They're both later in the Megillah. One is lahashmid laharog ulaabed. We don't know if it's lahashmid laharog or lahashmid vilaharog. We don't know if there's a vav in front of that word or not. Also, a little bit later on, it says v'ish lo amad lifnehem. We don't know if it's lifnehem or bifnehem. Is it a lamed or a beis? So therefore, the chazan reads those two. Well, some do just the word itself to read it twice, once one way, once the other way. And the minhag in Beth Jacob is the chazan does the entire pasuk twice, once one way, once the other way. So you'll hear that he does it again. Sometimes, well, why is he doing it again? Because they're changing just to make that nuanced difference, because we're not sure what the proper word is. The bracha before the Megillah, there are three brachos before the Megillah. So one is Al Mikra Megillah, another one is Sha'asanisim, and the other one is Shehechiyanu. And then after the Megillah, there's also a bracha as well. Now, a few details about the brachos are as follows, which is that there is a machlokas, it's a difference of opinion, whether women are required to read the Megillah or hear the Megillah. Now, men are for sure required to read the Megillah, but not all the men read it. One man reads it, and all the men listen. So by listening, it's as if you're reading it. So even if women are obligated to read, you don't have to actually read it. You can hear someone reading it, and thereby you fulfill your obligation. That's okay. Where it makes a difference whether the obligation is to read or to hear it is what bracha to make. So the standard bracha is Al Mikra Megillah, on the reading of the Megillah. But there are poskim that say that women are not required to read, only required to hear. In which case, the bracha changes to Lishmoa Mikra Megillah, to hear the reading of the Megillah. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah says would be the appropriate bracha for women, so that if there's a reading where there are only women there, that someone is reading only for women, there are no men to hear the Megillah, then they should change the nusach, change the wording of the bracha from Al Mikra Megillah to Lishmoa Mikra Megillah. I do not know what Sfaradim do in this case. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says for Ashkenazim. Either way that you say the bracha, you fulfill your obligation. You don't have to worry about it. If the person says Al Mikra Megillah, it's also okay. But there is a custom to change it to Lishmoa Mikra Megillah. The bracha after the Megillah is only said in a tzibor, only when there's a minyan. If there's no minyan of men, then there's no bracha after the Megillah. So if there's a Megillah reading just for women, they do not recite the bracha after the Megillah. However, it is appropriate to say or sing, if the men leave the room, it is appropriate to say Shoshanas Yaakov. It says it in Shulchan Aruch. This is not like some cute thing that we do. In Shulchan Aruch it says that there's a requirement at the night after the Megillah to say Arur Haman Baruch Mordechai Arura Zeresh Brucha Esther V'gam Charvona Zachor Latov. And this is not in the Shoshanas Yaakov to say Arurim Kol HaRishayim, all the Rishayim, all the evil people are cursed. Bruchim Kol HaTzadikim, blessed are all of the Tzadikim. That's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. So it's saying Shoshanas Yaakov or singing Shoshanas Yaakov. It's not just a cute thing to do. It actually is part of the minhag of what is expected with the Megillah reading, and one should do that. Any questions on the Megillah reading so far? Yeah.
Okay, so when you said if you don't hear a word, well, I find the reading it so fast.
Yeah.
If I missed out where they are, then if I try to go back and read something myself, then I'm not hearing what they're reading for like 5 or 6.
Yeah, if you can't catch up, then don't read it. You heard the words. Most of the time when we're trying to read to catch up, it's because we're kind of getting neurotic about it. Oh, maybe I missed a word. We didn't really miss a word. He's reading. The only way we really miss a word is if he reads while they're banging for Haman, which most of the Bali Kriya know not to do that.
Okay.
So it's okay. Just rely on the fact that you heard it. And yeah. Just let it go. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Right.
Okay. about any of the newfangled technology that you could be listening to this on your phone?
No, it doesn't work. You got to hear it in person.
Okay.
You got to hear it in person.
Okay.
Yeah.
No virtual reality.
No. It's got to be in person. It's got to be in person.
Okay.
Women are obligated in the Megillah as well as men, which means that a woman could read for herself. Let's say the women can't come to, as we said, it's better to hear it with a minyan. That's the best way to hear it. But if you can't hear it with a minyan, so a woman could read herself. If you know how to read it and you have a klaf, so you could read it. And some women know how to read it. And there's nothing wrong with you reading it to yourself. Could a woman read for another woman? You can read for yourself. Could you read for another woman? We know that with shofar, for example, that even though it is in a shas adchak, if it's a difficult situation, there's no man to blow the shofar, then a woman could blow the shofar for another woman. But that is considered to be only if there's no man. If there's a man available, it should be a man, because it's not so simple that a woman could blow for another woman. So what about Megillah? Could a woman read for another woman? And the answer is yes, a woman can read for another woman, and that would be acceptable, so that if one woman knows how to read, and the women, two, three women, need to hear the Megillah, it's late in the night, they missed the first reading, they can't hear it with a minyan anymore, so one woman could read for another woman or for another couple of women. However, according to, at least according to some of the poskim, and the Mishnah brings this, that a woman cannot read for a lot of other women. He doesn't define what is a lot. But for a lot of women, it would be unacceptable for a woman to read for a lot of women. Only if it's a small group. But if it's a large group, then according to some poskim, they have not fulfilled their obligation to hear the Megillah. So one should not have a woman read for a lot of other women. I don't know what a lot is, but we can surmise that a lot, if it's a large gathering, then it should not be done. But in a small group, it would be acceptable for a woman to read for another woman. A cute story, not about Megillah, but about shofar, is that there was one time that our daughter Malka actually can blow shofar very well. Ever since she was a little kid, she was able to blow shofar. So when her birthday is in Elul, so the year she turned Bas Mitzvah, which was just a few weeks before Rosh Hashanah, it was the first day of Rosh Hashanah, and Esther was walking, and a woman told her she'd never heard shofar. And the thing is that it was late in the day, the first day.
It was the second day?
Okay.
It was Friday. It was so close to Shkia.
They were all in shul. There was no way to go get a man. Everybody was in shul davening. There was no way to go get a man. So Esther ran home and got Malka, and Malka blew shofar. But again, that's because there was no man available. But with Megillah, it would be acceptable. Even if there is a man available, it would be acceptable if it's a small group for a woman to read for other women. Any questions on that? The brachos that we say, so we say a shechianu. Now the shechianu is for reading the Megillah. So that's fine. The problem is that the next morning, when we read the Megillah again, so we say shechianu again, but we already said shechianu the night before for the Megillah. So it's questionable whether we would say a second shechianu for the reading in the morning. But our minhag is that we do say another shechianu, and we justify it by having in mind the other mitzvos, because we have not yet done shalach manos, we have not yet done matanos la'avyonim, we have not yet done the seuda. So it is appropriate that for the shechianu that is said, that is recited for the daytime reading of the Megillah, that a person have in mind for the other mitzvos as well. In the event that that they forgot to, or that whatever it is, it's still fine. But l'chad chila, a person should have in mind for the other mitzvos for the daytime reading. I'm just making sure we didn't miss anything about Megillah reading.
When's the latest on the day of Purim that you can hear Megillah?
You can hear Megillah up until Shkia, up until sunset. You can still hear the Megillah. It's better to hear it earlier only because there are other things to do, especially the Seuda, but if one did not hear it, one can hear it all the way up until Shkia. That would be acceptable. Yeah?
So it's assumed that a woman cannot read for a man.
A woman should not read for a man. That is correct.
Okay.
On Purim we say Al Hanisim. We say Al Hanisim both in davening and in benching. So Al Hanisim is added in. If Al Hanisim is forgotten for whatever reason, one still fulfills the obligation both of benching and of davening. The Shemona Esrei and benching is not repeated for leaving out Al Hanisim. We do not say Al Hanisim on Shushan Purim, only on Purim. Once Purim is over, there is no Al Hanisim. Sometimes the Seuda starts on Purim and stretches on into the nighttime. There one would say Al Hanisim, just like we say Ritzei when Shalosh Shudas goes into the nighttime. Same thing over here. As long as the main part of the Seuda was eaten during the day, then Al Hanisim is still said, even though it's now past Shkia by the time they are benching. Shalach Manos. Shalach Manos, the mitzvah of Shalach Manos is to send two items to one person. Two items to one person. We generally send lots of items to lots of people. There's no mitzvah to have a theme. Yes.
I heard it was two for two.
No, two items to one person.
Okay.
Two items to one person. Those two items can be the same bracha. There is no requirement to have two brachos. That is a mistake. It is a common error. There is no such rule anywhere. Nobody, it's not a machlokas. Nobody holds it has to be two brachos. One bracha is fine. Not only that, it can be two drinks. It doesn't even have to be food. You can send orange juice and apple juice. And you have fulfilled your obligation for Shalach Manos. So what does it have to be? But it has to be two things, which means you can't send, let's say, two hamantashen you probably shouldn't do. I was going to say maybe different flavor hamantashen. But it needs to be clearly two different things. That's what it has to be. The person receiving it should feel like they're getting two things, not double of the same thing. But it can be the same bracha. It can even be two drinks. It could be a drink and a food. That would be fine. It has to be ready to eat. It can't be something that has to be prepared. So you can't send a tea bag. That's not ready to eat. Water has to be added. You can't send something that has to be cooked, or it could be heated up, and because it's already ready to eat, you know, the person likes to eat it hot. That's their business. But as long as it's ready to eat, it has to be ready to eat as is. So that's what should be done. But again, it can be the same bracha. It could even be drinks.
Yeah.
As long as you have two items, thank you. If you have two items, you can include other things that do need preparation. That's fine. But you need two items that can be eaten as is. That's fine. Somebody once wanted to send all the ingredients for a soup, which was very cute, but they're not yotze the mitzvah. So they had to throw in two other things that are ready to eat, because you can't fulfill the obligation with something which needs to be prepared. As an aside, humintashen, I was talking to my family about this tonight, humintashen, there are different flavors of humintashen that people have, and there is a flavor of humintashen that most people under a certain age would never touch, and that is mun humintashen. Mun humintashen is poppy seed humintashen. It's not sweet. And my father, that's what he wants to eat. That's all he wants to eat is mun humintashen. It's the earlier generations, that's what they were into. That actually has a minhag. It comes from someplace. That's because the Esther, when she was in the palace, could not find kosher food. Just like before her, when Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, when they were in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar, they also could not find kosher food. And they ate zeronim. They ate seeds. Because seeds are kosher. So therefore, there is a minhag on Purim to eat seeds. And that's where the minhag comes from, to fill the humintashen with mun because of the seeds. Now, I'm not telling you should eat it if you don't like it. I personally don't like it and I don't eat it. But I'm just telling you it has a source to have that type of humintashen. For those who do like it, it has a source. When sending Shalach Manos, it is mentioned specifically in Halacha that men should not send to women, and women should not send to men. Women should send to women, men should send to men. Now, typically, the way it's done in our society is families send to families. That's perfectly fine. We're not talking about who's delivering it. We're talking about the personal feeling, the message that it's coming from one person to another person, if it is being given as an individual thing. Sometimes you say, you know, this is from me to you. This is a special gift from me to you. So it should be man to man or woman to woman. It should not be man to woman or woman to man. That's not an appropriate thing to do. And it mentions it specifically in Shulchan Aruch that it should not be done. The women are obligated in shalach manos. So if the family is giving shalach manos, some have the custom that the women of the family actually acquire one of the shalach manos and send it to one of their friends so that they're officially fulfilling the obligation. It's not required to do that because since it's from the family, so it's understood it's from the men in the family, it's from the women in the family, it's from the whole family to everybody, and we send so many shalach manos that there's enough to go around. So it doesn't have to be done, but again, some people do have the custom that a woman actually physically and officially acquires a particular shalach manos and then sends it to another woman in order to officially fulfill the obligation. If that is what you do, then that's a nice thing, but it is not a requirement to do that. One should not send shalach manos to a person who is in avelus, in their year of mourning for their parents. One should not send shalach manos to that person. That person does send shalach manos, because they are also required in the mitzvos, but we don't send gifts to a person who is in their year of mourning, and therefore one should not send shalach manos to a person who is in mourning. Again, you can send to the family. Family to family is fine, but as an individual, one should not send to a person who is in their year of mourning for a father or a mother. Any questions on shalach manos? Yeah.
Is there an inyan with giving shalach manos to somebody else to then give it?
Yeah, so there, it's considered to be a better gift if it's given through a shliach, through an agent, because it's like more of an official thing. I'm sending you something. Like it's got like that official air to it. It's a nicer thing. It's not required, but it is a nicer thing to do, and therefore many people do that they'll have the person who is actually officially giving it not deliver it, but someone else deliver it to the home. Yeah.
What if you never touch the ingredients for the shalach manot and you outsource the packaging and everything is done for you?
So these things, when you buy, you pay into a thing and they send shalach manot,
yes,
for you to everything, it is questionable whether you can fulfill your obligation that way. I don't want to, you know, I don't know what the rabbis have said here in Atlanta. I'm not sure, but it is a question whether one fulfills obligation. It's still a mitzvah of tzedakah if it's a tzedakah worthy organization, but it is questionable whether one fulfills the obligation when it is done that way. So ask your LOR for that. That's a good question. what else about shalach manos? Shalach manos, like the other mitzvos of matanas davyonim and the su'uda, can only be done Purim day. You can't fulfill your obligation of shalach manos the night of Purim. Now, there's nothing wrong with giving something to somebody else the night of Purim, but you don't get the mitzvah of shalach manos unless you do it during the day. You have to give it during the day. During the day means from sunrise to sunset, somewhere in that time of Purim day. That is when one can fulfill their obligation of shalach manos. It has to do with when it is received by the other person, meaning that you can send it earlier. Let's say you send it in the mail. You can send it earlier, but they have to get it on Purim day in order for you to fulfill your obligation of shalach manos, similar to matanos davyonim, which we'll speak about in a moment.
Question.
Yeah.
If you really are only required to send one, and that is absolutely delivered on Purim day, does it really matter when everything else? I mean,
no.
If it's a little early,
no.
A little
yeah,
little
right. Whatever. You fulfill your obligation with one. That's correct. That's right. That's right. So, but if you did everything not on Purim day, would be a problem. But as long as one is on Purim day, you're fine. Yeah, it's not a problem. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the people who celebrate Shushan Purim,
yeah,
the people in Yerushalayim,
yeah,
but they have to say Al Hanisim on Shushan Purim,
right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They do.
Okay.
They do.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wait a minute. There's something else about shalach manos which just slipped my mind. Okay. Well, it'll come back to me. Okay, any other questions on shalach manos?
I have a question.
Yeah.
If you're going to Sa'uda and you're bringing something to the Sa'uda,
yes,
could, you know,
Could that be your shalach? Could that be your shalach manos? It could be your shalach manos. If you give it as shalach manos, it can be your shalach manos. Yes, yes. In fact, that's actually what I wanted to talk about. The original giving of shalach manos was not the world's largest stockpile of sugar known in the history of man. That's not the way it was originally. It was originally the suda itself. That was what you gave items that are ready to eat, food. That right. We have kind of morphed into dessert foods and snacks and candies and all that, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the original idea was that it be part of the suda. In fact, the Gemara says if there are two poor people are also required to give shalach manos, and what two poor people can do is simply exchange their suda. That they give their suda one to the other, and they both get the mitzvah of shalach manos, because they're taking something of theirs and giving it to somebody else. Similarly, re-gifting, as long as you acquire what is given to you, so it was given to you and now it becomes yours, you acquire it, you can then give it back to somebody else, and hopefully not to the same person who gave it to you, you gotta remember. All right. So that you do fulfill your obligation with that as well, because it once it's given to you, it's yours, and then you can do with it as you please, and you can give it to somebody else, and you fulfill your obligation. Matanas Levionim similarly can only be done on Purim day. It cannot be done before Purim, after Purim, it has to be done on Purim day. How is one Yotze Matanas Levionim? Matanas Levionim is, and this is perhaps what you were thinking about before, Matanas Levionim is a gift it could be food as well as money. It doesn't have to be money, it could be food, but it is a gift to two poor people. Here it has to be two. Not one poor person, but two poor people. The way we know this is because the Megillah says, Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reyehu, a man to his friend. That's singular. Where matanos la evyonim means gifts to the poor, evyonim is plural. So it has to be a minimum of two poor people have to receive our tzedakah on Purim day. How much do you have to give? So you have to give enough that a poor person could, in theory, purchase a meal. So you have to give enough that two different poor people could, in theory, purchase a meal. They don't have to purchase a meal with the money you give them, but they could have to be able to if they wanted to. How much is that today? How much do you need to purchase a meal? In theory, a person could probably purchase a meal with about $5. A little bit of bread, maybe some hummus, and they're good to go. That's a meal. So it doesn't have to be, you know, some bread and something to spread on the bread, and that would be okay. Maybe $10, somewhere in there, that is acceptable. So two times that, whatever that minimum is, and you give that from Matanas Levionim again to two different poor people, then you fulfill your obligation. If you give that amount of money, you give, let's say, let's call it $5, you give $10, which is two times $5, you give that to one poor person, you've not fulfilled your obligation. It has to go to two different poor people. When we give to an organization that delivers Matanas Levionim on our behalf, like Yad Liyad, so then we fulfill our obligation because the organization is giving it to many poor people. So since the organization is giving it to many poor people, our money is distributed and we don't have to worry that it's all being given to one poor person. It all goes into a big pot and that's all given out to separate poor people, and therefore we have fulfilled our obligation. Again, it has to be done on Purim day, which means it has to be received by the poor person on Purim day. So when we send money to Eretz Yisrael or other places that collect money for Matanas Levionim, in order for us to fulfill our obligation, we have to make sure that it is going to be distributed on Purim day. They often write in their advertising, it will be distributed on Purim day. Clearly, if you donate to one of these places, including locally to Yad Liyad, if you do it with an hour left to Purim, you don't have high hopes of that money being given out on Purim. Probably the Matanas Levionim was already distributed. It's unlikely it'll be given out that late in the day by the organization. So if you haven't done your Matanas Levionim and it's already late in the day, make sure you check with whomever you're giving it to make sure that it's distributed, because you may not fulfill your obligation because it's just going to sit there until after Purim and being given out after Purim, and then you don't get the mitzvah of Matanas Levionim. You still get the mitzvah of tzedakah, but you don't get the mitzvah of Matanas Levionim. The Are women obligated to matanos levyonim? The answer is yes. Just like men are obligated, women are obligated. Again, if it's the family giving matanos levyonim, as long as there's enough money that it's from the men and from the women in the family, and there's enough for two poor people in that amount of money, so that would be okay. So if you have, let's say, a husband and wife want to give matanos levyonim, so if we're going to argue that a meal is $5, so if they give $20 of matanos levyonim, then it's two different meals for each, the husband and wife giving the matanos levyonim, they would fulfill their obligation. They can give it to one organization, that organization will distribute it, and it's fine. We have a rule on Purim of kol haposhet yad, anybody who puts out their hand. The rule normally is, this is a poorly understood rule. We know that there's something called miser. Miser is 10% of one's earnings, and that's the amount of money that one should give to tzedakah all year round. That's what a person should be giving to tzedakah all year round. There is a debate amongst the poskim how you calculate miser. What can miser be used for? That's beyond the scope of this particular discussion. But there's very, very different approaches to miser. But that's a question of how much a person is required to give. But there's a different discussion, which is as follows: if a person is standing around and a legitimate poor person comes over and says, "I need tzedakah," and puts out their hand, and the one who's being asked has money to give, I'm not talking about they have money in their pocket, because it could be that money is needed for something else, but they have some extra money that they can give, there is a requirement to give tzedakah. One is not allowed to not give if a legitimate poor person asks, and a person has the time, the money, the ability, is standing right there, a person is required to give. However, two very important howevers. One important however is, you don't have to give the amount they're asking for. You can give $1, you can give 50 cents, you can give a quarter. You don't have to give the amount that they're asking. That's not your requirement. The requirement to completely take care of this poor person is on the entire community. It's not on one person. Therefore, you're not required to give everything that they're asking for. If they don't like what you give them, you don't have to give them. You can say, "This is what I'm giving." If they don't like it, then they don't like it. But there's another important however, which is, I kept stressing, it has to be a legitimate poor person. If you don't know if the person is a legitimate poor person, you have the right to investigate. You don't have to assume the person is a legitimate poor person. Now, most people who ask are legitimate, and many times we know the person, and therefore the requirement would be there. But if we're not sure if the person is legitimate, or there's reason to believe the person is not legitimate, then we are not required to give. On Purim, there is a law of kol haposhet yad, which means we don't investigate. On Purim, when a person puts out their hand, then we presume that they are legitimate, that they legitimately need the money, and we don't investigate the person, and we give, again, you don't have to give a lot of money. You give a little bit of money, but then we give. And also, again, if a person doesn't have money to give, you're not required to. But if you have money to give, you're not involved in something else. If you're involved in a different mitzvah, you're not required to stop the mitzvah you're doing to give tzedakah. You're involved in one mitzvah, you don't have to stop to do another mitzvah. But if you're just standing around, then there would be a requirement to give on Purim because of kol haposhet yad. There was a problem a number of Purims in Beth Jacob. I don't think this happened last year, but there was a problem of some non-Jews posing as Jewish poor people and asking for money. In that situation, of course, we would not be required to give them. They were charlatans. We don't even know if they were poor, but they were taking advantage of Purim to pose as if they were they were needy. So if there is a suspicion that that is going on, one is, of course, allowed to investigate to make sure that that's not what's happening. I don't believe that it happened last year. It did happen in previous years in Beth Jacob. There was a problem with that issue. Any questions on Matanos Levyonim? Yeah?
Is there any that you have to spend as much? You can't spend more on a shop on us than
There is no law like that. The poskim say that if you're going to be spending more money than the bare minimum, which is the shalach maros, one gift of two items to one person, and matanos levionim, two gifts to two different poor people, if you're going to do more than that, so the poskim say it is better to spend your money on matanos levionim than on shalach maros. But there's no such rule that you're not allowed to spend more on shalach maros than matanos levionim. People say that because it's a nice way to gauge what you're doing, because the shalach maros is kind of reciprocal, it's all goodwill and good friends and like that, and the matanos levionim is more of a tzedakah. So they say, look, if you're going to give that much to Shalach Maros, you should do at least that much for Matanos Levionim. But it's not a requirement. It's not a halacha. Yeah?
How about non-Jews? Like, if you're on 85 on Northwood Hills and there's that...
You're asking about tzedakah, not about Matanos Levionim. Yeah. Matanos Levionim you can only fulfill with Jews. Right. The halacha is tzedakah. I don't want to get completely into the tzedakah of this, but the halacha is mefarnesim aniyei akom im aniyei Yisrael, that we do give, if we have a soup kitchen that's feeding Jews, and a non-Jew comes, we feed them as well in order to maintain shalom. So we do that. However, it's not a requirement like with the Jews. So if you're on 85 and someone's asking money, you don't have to give. And then you can use your own judgment in terms of Chilul Hashem and in terms of shalom. That's your own judgment, but it's not a requirement to give. No. Yes?
When you're giving it to an organization, can you not do it before Purim?
You can do it before Purim as long as they distribute it on Purim. Right. And these organizations, that's what they do. They advertise that they'll distribute it on Purim. Matanos, yeah. Yes?
For your organization, you have to make sure that each person is getting a meal?
We assume they're doing it right. These organizations, they hopefully know what they're doing, which is right. I mean, look, if it's $5, we hope they're giving more than, you know, a dollar or two to each poor person. We hope.
No,
Not per person.
No, Rabbi Son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Matanos Levionim is different than Shalach Maros in that a woman is allowed to give to a man, and a man is allowed to give to a woman. Matanos Levionim is not the same as Shalach Maros because it's tzedakah, and it's not the same kind of goodwill kind of thing. It's not a social thing. The issue is the social part of it, that a man and a woman who are not related should not be creating a social bond like that with Shalach Maros. But Matanos Levionim, it is okay for a woman to give to a man or a man to give to a woman. That is, of course, if you're giving directly. If you're going through the organization, then the whole thing doesn't apply anyway. But if you are giving directly, it is okay, even if it is cross-gender, that would be okay for Matanos Levionim. The Seuda, yes.
Okay, and then lots of people aren't really halakhically Jewish.
Okay, let's not go down that road. Yes, you have to give it to a halakhic Jew. Yes, yes.
Okay.
The Seuda. So the Seuda of Purim, there's a requirement to have a Seuda on Purim. That would be in the best case scenario, that would be to wash and to have a Shabbos-like meal, meaning to have special food that you wouldn't normally serve in a festive way, the way we would have a Yom Tov type of meal. This is not usually known, but this would have changed Purim completely. The very first Purim they celebrated back in the time of Mordechai and Esther was a Yom Tov. It was Asur Basias Malacha. You couldn't turn lights on, you couldn't drive. It was like a Yom Tov. But then they realized that it was not doable and they rescinded that part of the Gezerah. But that was the original Purim. The first Purim was Asur Basias Malacha. So it really had a Yom Tov. It was a Yom Tov. So we don't have that. They rescinded that immediately after the first Purim. But the Seuda should be, in best case scenario, a Yom Tov style meal with washing, with good food, with dessert, with everything that you would have at a regular meal. Of course, there's no kiddush. There's no kiddush. It's not Shabbos. It's not Yom Tov. There's no kiddush. But that makes a big difference because the bracha of Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz does not exempt wine or grape juice. If you drink wine or grape juice during a bread meal, you have to recite Borei Pri Hagafen. Now, we don't usually know that or think about that because on Shabbos, we have Kiddush. So we said Bari Pri HaGafen before we said Hamotzi. But on Purim, when there is no Kiddush, that's one of the times of the year where people don't remember that one is required to say a bracha of Bari Pri HaGafen before they drink wine or grape juice, even though they already washed and said Hamotzi. The mitzvah of the Seuda, one can fulfill it just by washing and having a little bit of bread, you know, having enough bread to bench on. One would fulfill their obligation. And it's likely one could even fulfill the obligation by having good food, even without the washing. If a person is staying away from bread, ask your LOR whether in a Purim Seuda situation, whether you can get away without washing at all. That's one of these questions, like on Shabbos and Yom Tov, whether it's okay to go without washing, and you can ask your rabbi about that. But again, in the best case scenario, it should mimic a Yom Tov type meal. The drinking at the Seuda is a Gemara which is brought in Shulchan Aruch. Chayv Adam Lebsumei Bepuria Ad Lo Yada Bein Aruch Haman LeBaruch Mardechai, that a person is required to become inebriated on Purim until they don't know the difference between Aruch Haman. Haman is cursed, Baruch Mordechai, Mordechai is blessed. It does not mean that a person should become so drunk that they start saying Aruch Mordechai and Baruch Haman. That is not what it means. There is no mitzvah for a person to get to a point where they have no idea what is going on. As the Gemara calls that, Kishichruso Shel Lot, to get as drunk as Lot got in the cave, there is no requirement to do that, and in fact that is not a good thing for a person to get that drunk. But there is a concept on Purim. I don't want to say chiyuv because the post can deal with this in different ways, but to drink more than one normally drinks. This is for men. There is no source that a woman need drink on Purim. A woman could drink on Purim if she wants, but there is no source that a woman need drink on Purim. Or a man, there is a source in the Gemara that a man should drink more than he normally drinks. So for a man who never drinks, having a little bit to drink is already fulfilling the obligation. For a man who typically drinks a lot, then they would have to drink more than they normally do. Yoser mi limudo is what it says, more than they're accustomed to on Purim. And that is talking about at the Seuda. It is for this reason that the minhag is to have the Seuda after Mincha. Because once a man drinks, a woman as well, but a woman doesn't daven the same way a man does, once a man drinks, he's not allowed to daven Shemona Esrei. So since Mincha has a firm deadline of nightfall, So therefore, the minhag is to first daven mincha and then have the seuda. It does make a difference at night when the seuda is over and the men are whatever it is and they're all, you know. Truth is, I don't really know what happens at that time. But the men, as they're getting over their drinking, they cannot daven ma'ariv until they are completely past their wine. If they're still feeling a little buzz, they're not allowed to daven Ma'ariv. If you can't daven Shemona Esrei, even when there's a little buzz, you're not allowed to daven Shemona Esrei. That is why it's a big problem for people to drink during davening on Shabbos. It's a really big problem because they can't daven Musaf. Once they're feeling a little bit of buzz, you can't daven Shemona Esrei. Usher to daven. It's better not to daven at all than to daven if someone is feeling a little bit of a buzz for Shemona Esrei. The drinking on Purim does have a source. Again, it's not to get so drunk that a person doesn't know what's going on, but to get Yosem Elimudo more than what one is accustomed to. It is appropriate. It should go without saying. I hope it's not necessary to say this, that any time there is drinking at any kind of meal, more than just Kiddush, anytime there's real drinking going on, men and women should be separate. They should not be at the same table. They should not be interacting with each other. If there is drinking going on, whether it's the men drinking alone, whether it's the men and the women drinking, they should not be drinking together. That is certainly against the spirit of halacha and can cause all kinds of terrible things that can happen, and things have happened. It should go without saying that when there is drinking, meaning drinking more than just Kiddush, there's real drinking going on, men and women should be separate. This has nothing to do with what you normally do about your separation of men and women. This is not an extra stringency or frumkeit. This is just common sense. If there's drinking going on, men and women should be separated. They should not be sitting together at the same table unless it's all family. Otherwise, it should not be going on when there's drinking going on. there are minhagim on Purim, for instance, dressing up and begging for Haman. These minhagim go back a long way. They're not new. Dressing up on Purim is not a brand new thing. It goes back centuries, as does banging for Haman. It says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch that one should not be mishana minhag. One should not change the minhag. If this is the minhag, this way it normally is done, it is an appropriate thing to do. You don't have to dress up if you're uncomfortable dressing up, but it is considered to be an old minhag and one that is acceptable and is considered to be in the spirit of the day to dress up for Purim and also to bang for Haman and any of the other minhagim that we have on Purim, like Grager and things like that. Those are all minhagim of Purim. The dressing up, I got a question today. Somebody wrote to me, could their 10-year-old daughter dress up like... The question was, well, I shouldn't say like who, but like a man. That was the question, because then you'll know who it is if you see the person on Purim. So, could they dress up like a man? It is acceptable for men to dress up like women and women to dress up like men on Purim, provided, number one, of course, that all standards of tznius are maintained. Obviously, women should not wear pants if they're dressing like a man, but it is acceptable to dress up like a man. That's number one. Number two is that it must be obvious that this man is really a man, this woman is really a woman. It should not be that the costume is so good that you can't tell what the person is. I was once dancing on Purim, and a woman came into the circle and came over to me. I was like, ah! This is back in Baltimore. And I was like, and then he said, you don't know who I am? Right. I was like totally weirded out. So anyway, but aside from all the problems of today's culture that we have with that sort of thing, aside from all of that, but in halacha, it should not be done in a way that you can't tell. It should be obvious that this is really a man, this is really a woman. But other than that, as long as the standards of tznius are maintained and you know that which gender it is, it's clear which gender it is okay to mimic. A girl says, I want to be Mordechai, it's fine. A boy says, I want to look like Vashti, that's fine. It's not a problem on Purim to do that. Any questions on all these things?
I'm just interested to know where the minhag actually came from.
For dressing up?
Yeah.
It probably has to do with the fact that the Megillah does not have Hashem's name in it. It's all hidden, it's all veiled. Esther means hidden.
When did it start?
Yeah. It's spoken about way back. It's spoken about, we're talking well before Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is more than 500 years ago. It's before that. It goes back. It's an old, old minhag. Banging from it is also an old, old minhag. It goes back way, way, way back.
Is there something about not dressing up while you're hearing the Megillah?
It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that not to dress up for the Megillah. The question is dressing up for davening. Davening Shmoneh Esrei, where you're standing before the king. You're not supposed to be drunk to be in a disrespectful way. So that's the question, whether to do or not. In yeshiva, the typical thing is to dress up after mincha, because for mincha, they're having mincha, but there are those who argue that on Purim, it's normal to dress up, so you don't look disrespectful. That's the way Purim is. Purim is dressing up. So that is a strong argument, and if that's what, you know, certainly you see a lot of people dressed up, and it's fine. As long as the standards of tznius are maintained, it's okay to dress up for davening. Any other questions? Okay, I think that covers Purim. Yes?
Sorry, I did want to know about the Hamitash. Is it his ears? Is it his hat? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. The meaning of Hamitash also is to have something covered up by something else. If that's the same concept. I know, like kreplach. Yeah, that's really, you know, yeah, okay, with the way you do it, you can still see it, and then, okay, I mean, that's the minute it comes from, right? Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, and we have another class in a few weeks. This time it will be at the Friedman's, and that is a pre-Pesach shir. We're going to do something similar to what we did tonight. There's much more about Pesach. We're going to limit it to specific things for Pesach, because otherwise we'll be there all night. But we'll try our best to cover what we can for Pesach.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.